We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 224. It has been what feels like 20 years since the last time we saw a Yankees game. It's funny, when you're in the groove of the regular season and there's night after night of Yankee baseball and then you don't have it for two straight days, you start to get withdrawals.
Yeah, it's a strange thing, especially when you're actually expecting a doubleheader. You're expecting a twin bill and you get nothing, absolutely nothing. So it was a disappointment today because I was really looking forward to taking advantage of this Tiger series right now, because now is when these guys needed it. We don't need this in June. We need the Tiger series right now when the Tigers are terrible.
I expect them to be terrible in June,
but we currently see how terrible they are now. So, you know, I wanted that nice little series win, but
absolutely.
I guess it's still a series win, right? Kind of.
Why not? Well, I guess we won't know until June 4th.
Yeah, that's true.
I tweeted this question out. It's interesting. How many games did the Yankees have canceled this weekend? Two or three?
Two.
How many did they have postponed?
They had three postponed.
See, I disagree with you. I think they had three canceled and two postponed, because there's only going to be two games later in the season, but they had three games not played. One on Saturday and then two on Sunday. It's a trick question. It's a complete, what'll put your brain into a pretzel trying to think about this. It's like the Rain Man equation with the numbers flying across the screen. You don't know what's happening here.
Yeah,
but I'm very
still
divisive
considering
on Twitter,
one of them.
50-50.
You're doubling up on one game though. I'm only counting one game as one.
I get that. Two games postponed, three games canceled.
All right. Yeah, it's been the bottom line is we didn't play any baseball, and unfortunately, that's the rain. It's crazy because it was you get like some decent days where you can actually play baseball on the East Coast, and then you go to Detroit and it's just shitty.
Yeah, it was pretty crummy on Friday night too. And you just looking at the forecast, you knew they were going to have a hard time. That's why when they scheduled the doubleheader for today, and the first one gets rained out, it's like, we know what's going to happen in the night game. They're not playing at 7 o'clock at night. It's going to be 30 degrees and raining out. Like, come on, guys, just cancel it now. So save ourselves the 2 hours of wondering, but
got to wait. The Yankees always wait. I feel like every single time there's a delay in this.
Yeah, definitely. Before we get into everything, I want to just remind people about May 26th event versus the Angels. That is a Saturday night game, 7 p.m. We're going to be doing the pregame at the Bronx Brewery. With your ticket, you not only get a seat in section 205 or 206, which is a great location, middle level, right field, right behind Judge. Then you also get a t-shirt, custom designed t-shirt for the event. The ones that were, it's going to be like sort of just
April
one
was
mission.
The one mission shirt.
Right. And it's going to be like, that's going to be the theme, is this chase for 28, this mission that the Yankees are on. That's going to be the theme with a lot of these t-shirts.
Yeah, but maybe not. Who knows? It depends on what I'm thinking of when I'm designing it. So don't be setting me up. Don't put baby in the corner. Don't put baby in the corner with his designs. No. I have not come up with it yet. I'm actually in the middle of the concepts, but they're going to be good. And it might have something to. We may be trolling Ohtani in the shirt too. There may be some of that.
We might get in trouble. He might shut us up because he's looking pretty damn good. Yeah. And I hope the Angels change their plan for him. Their game actually got rained out today. He was supposed to pitch. He's getting rescheduled to, I believe, Tuesday. But their plan is he pitches every Sunday, but they give him a buffer because he's a little baby and he needs a buffer on a day off on Saturday and Monday. So if that were the case, we might not see him. But I think by the time May 26th rolls around, the Angels are going to need him in the lineup. Maybe we get to see him DH.
Well, and you know, once you start fixing into these rainouts and the fact that he's going to pitch on a Tuesday now, if he does actually pitch in that game, which I assume he would, then you know that schedule is all screwed up. Baseball and managers always go in with their eyes wide open and try to like put this label and this schedule on things, and then it changes all the time. So,
well, you have a plan. You have a 5-man rotation, and injuries happen. Shit's out the window, and then look what the Yankees had to deal with in the first week of the season.
Well, I hope they get greedy because they're realizing what he is right now, and they're like, yeah, we need to get this guy out way more often than this.
You know, I actually read It was clickbait. I read an article. I forget where it was. I'm not even going to give them the glory of telling them where it was. But it was the title was Ohtani trolling us in spring training? So was Ohtani being crappy on purpose so he could just shut everyone up in the first week of the season?
No, I think that he was using spring training as a way to get better and work on things, something that a lot of people use spring training for. People don't care what happens in spring training. It just so happens that he had all this height and was terrible, so that was the first thing anybody ever saw. But no, he was just getting ready. He was, getting used to things, trying things out, working on certain things, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, it's when guys are coming in saying that he belongs in the minor leagues after a few spring training games. Like, I'm wondering what you're watching. What are you looking for that says that? The result, or are you looking at the way he is?
27 ERA as a pitcher, and he was batting like 110 as a hitter.
But again, that's the results don't matter at all. Like, I understand those are pretty.
But he looked ugly doing it.
They're high and high, like extremely high and extremely low.
He looked really ugly doing it. But yeah, whatever. This is not about Ohtani. But also, as we mentioned, you get the t-shirt, you get the game event, you get the pregame party and a free beer at that pregame party. So those are on the website. Go check it out. That's our next event, May 26th. Anything else you want to add to that?
No. Did you say it's at the brewery? We're doing it at the brewery beforehand and you get the first pint, the 16-ounce pints included in the ticket.
Literally just said that.
Perfect.
So we said the two games on Saturday and Sunday are rescheduled for a doubleheader on Monday, June 4th. For a 1 o'clock and a 7 o'clock game. That Monday was supposed to be an off day. The Yankees should have been traveling from Baltimore to Toronto. Now they have to make a pit stop in Detroit for that doubleheader. This is going to come. You mentioned that it sucks because the Tigers are pretty trashy right now. The Yankees could use a rebound. And this was the Tigers were that team. Now they're going to have to play them in the middle of a stretch where they have a pretty tough schedule. That is going to be, they're going to play 14 games in 13 days. The Angels, Houston, Baltimore, Detroit, and Toronto in June. Now, ideally, the Yankees will be healthy by that point. They'll have Sabathia back. Maybe their pitchers will start to get into more of a groove because the weather will be warm. Stanton, Judge, Sanchez, who knows, maybe even Bird at that point. But 14 games in 13 days is not fun, especially when you're playing the Astros in the middle of that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those stretches that you wish you had a day off in between. So hopefully, especially a doubleheader, when you have a doubleheader lumped into that stretch of a games too, it's brutal because it hurts you before and after, depending on what Boone's going to do. So you run into some managerial decisions when you're trying to control guys and how long a catcher can go or what your bullpen's going to do because there's a quick turnaround now from the night before and the night after. So. It's not a good situation for them, but what are you going to do? It's I can't control the weather, unfortunately. If we could, it would be better. And I know a lot of people are bitching about, hey, why are we playing so many early games, some of these April games in places that can possibly be weather issues? But that's a whole rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean it's like the schedule that people are complaining about the schedule, and obviously that. You could work it out where East Coast and cold weather teams only play in warm weather or dome stadiums. The math checks out on that. But then that would be, what are we at? April 15th? So you're going to have the Yankees on the road for over 2 weeks of the season just because you don't want it to rain in New York during that time? And at this point, we're over 2 weeks into the season, and it's still frigid in New York City. It is going to be like close to 30 degrees. Possible snow coming in this area this week. Like, it is crazy. This weather is not how it should be at this point.
Well, right. And you can't just say that, the teams that are in bad weather, potentially bad weather cities have to go on the road for that long. Like that's where where everything goes wrong and where nothing, it doesn't make sense because then you're essentially giving them all of the beginning of the season, visitor games. And that's not fair to do it to any team. That's not how you, make a fair schedule. And once the schedule comes out, they have to, make certain checks to make sure that things are good and make sure that they're being as fair as they possibly can to all of the teams and just can't do that.
What about maybe they should just start the season a week or two later?
Well, the problem with that is then you're ending later and you're going to have a problem in the postseason. So that's the whole rub. The reason they wanted to bring it, I think, earlier this year was so that the postseason games aren't going so late.
No, and it's not. Nothing to do with that. They had added four extra off days to the schedule.
Right. But the games are going into November now. And depending on where you're playing, what happens if one of these bad weather cities is in the World Series, like the Yankees, and it's snowing in late October, early November? That's going to happen too.
Yeah. The only actual solution to this, it seems, is they'd have to chop off some games of the season, and we know that's not going to happen because that's going to be revenue out of the pockets of owners, and they're never going to sign up for that.
No, this is definitely one of those things that people just have to deal with. It sucks. It's not going
to
change.
It sucks. We didn't get to watch baseball for 2 days, and it sucks that the Yankees are going to then put them. Like, it's hard to sweep doubleheaders. So you were looking at going into this weekend, you wanted to sweep Detroit because they're not a good team. And now when they have to go on the road in the middle of this stretch and go to Detroit for a doubleheader and they split, you're going to say, okay, well, that's a win. Hopefully no one got injured in the doubleheader and you get out of there with one win, because that's what usually happens in doubleheaders.
Yeah, I'm wondering how their pitching staff is going to be by then, because currently it's not a good situation. So I can't imagine it getting too much better.
Sessa was going to have to start one of these games this weekend. Sessa will probably end up starting one of those games then, because they're going to have to call somebody up.
Yeah, I'm talking about Detroit, though. Detroit's still going to have a terrible rotation at that point.
Yeah, true. Possibly worse. Speaking of bad weather, it was bad weather Thursday for Sonny Gray's start. I am getting really sick and tired of watching Sonny Gray beat himself on the mound. He's got the stuff. He's got the movement on his pitches. He's got the arsenal. He can throw 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 100 different types of pitches, but he always seems to find himself in 2-2 and 3-2 counts. Gary Sanchez is flopping all over the place trying to block these pitches. It's just Sonny Gray does not look comfortable on the mound, and he's, like I said, he's beating himself, and he beat himself against the Red Sox.
You know, one of the big things talking about it, and we've talked about this 100 times, and he was vocal about it before the game too, saying that, you know, what do you have to do? What are the objectives of today's start? Well, I got to attack the zone. Got to make sure that I'm throwing a lot of strikes, being in there, being aggressive. And that was the one thing that was frustrating the hell out of me, because I used to love watching Sonny Gray pitch. I thought Sonny Gray is one of those guys that, you know, fits the mold of one of my, like, the guys that I like to watch pitch, as far as having good, a lot of different pitches, good stuff, mixes it up, and actually pitches. It reminds me of the El Duques of the world, although I'm not comparing the two. I'm just telling you that they had a lot of pitches and are fun to watch when they're good. And when you have that many pitches and you can't throw them for strikes, you know, then what's the point in having, you know, that many different pitches to deceive a batter, because it doesn't matter at that point. If you can't throw it within the strike zone, none of the other pitches matter. Your repertoire is then, you know, reduced to whatever you could throw over the plate.
I don't think he's a guy that doesn't have control of his stuff. And I think he's just afraid to throw strikes in a lot of situations. He's nibbling. I saw a guy nibbling. Like you said, he says, I want to attack the zone every single time. Then he goes out there and he doesn't do that. So I'm no longer going to listen to that, Sonny Gray. Like, until you go out there and prove it, shut the hell up. I don't want to hear your pregame press conferences about how you need to attack the zone. We all know you need to attack the zone. Every moron out there watching the game knows you need to attack the zone. He's not doing it.
He especially needs to attack the goddamn zone. I mean, his stuff is good enough where he can get swings and misses. And when you're not outside, when you're outside the zone, like I said before, like the repertoire of pitches that you have becomes, you know, less effective, obviously. Your arsenal is not there unless you can throw it for strikes. And if he's trying to be too cute, trying to be too, you know, too accurate on the corners, he needs to cut that shit out and get on the same page of whoever's catching, because I don't care who's catching. That is not a problem. And I know we have numbers that say they're different as far as the amount of innings.
Different is a way to.
Well, and
to
the, I mean, I'm saying it to be fair.
Sample size.
The sample size and the amount of innings that Gary Sanchez has caught are basically double. So, you know, look, the bottom line is you got to work with these guys. You can't have a personal catcher situation where you're only feeling comfortable with Austin Roman. To me, that's not a way a professional needs to play baseball. No. You need to get on the same page with Gary Sanchez. Figure that out.
Personal catchers, I think we've talked about personal catchers enough on this podcast. We hate them. And Boone doesn't like them. He said that in spring training. There will be no personal catchers on this team. Sonny Gray's had 3 starts so far this year. One of them came with Sanchez. It would have been 2 had Sanchez not left that extra inning game against Baltimore with the calf issue. That's the only reason he didn't catch Sonny Gray the next day, the game that we were there on April 7th. But the numbers for Romine and Sanchez are drastically different. He has three starts. This is actually from last year, from 2017. Three starts with Romine, 18.2 innings, 1.45 ERA, and seven walks. And then with Sanchez, it was eight starts, 46.2 innings, 4.63 ERA, and 20 walks. What are the numbers there that jump out to you?
You know, when you're looking at the numbers that are consistent to, that jump out to me are the walks. The walks are
consistently bad.
Consistently bad. He's not throwing strikes to anybody. I don't care who's receiving the ball. But that's a problem. That's where his problem is starting from, because this is what we saw last year too. Like, this guy had, you know, one of the best reputations coming over, throwing strikes, being, I know he takes a long time on the mound. He's like super deliberate in between pitches, which drives me a little bit insane. Like, I think it's hard to get a rhythm at that point. At least that's what it feels like. That's a real thing. But you know, he would throw strikes. The fact that he's throwing this many balls and walking this many guys per nine, 3.5 per nine, that's unacceptable. Not going to have success that way.
Especially against the Red Sox, who are super hot right now. That lineup is hitting.
You can't be behind in the count every time.
It was such a sloppy game, too. The Yankees didn't play good defense behind him. Sanchez was, like I said, flopping around back there trying to block these balls. It was ugly all around. And I it's just very frustrating because the talent is there. I think Cone said on the broadcast, Sonny Gray seems like he's always going for the corner, and that's what gets him in trouble. He needs to trust his zone and attack hitters, and his stuff is good enough to get guys out. He's got movement on his fastball. He can throw a couple different breaking balls. He can get guys out, not in the middle of the plate. No one gets guys out in the middle of the plate, but he doesn't need to hit the black every single time with his fastball, and he can still get guys out.
You know, during the last one too, and I know we're going to talk about press or the way that he kind of spoke after the game, because it was weird. It was a strange interview when they came to the locker and all the reporters were talking to him. But one of the things that, you know, they were talking about was the fact that he was shaking off Gary Sanchez quite a bit, and it didn't seem like they were on the same page. And as far as you know, what pitches to throw, when to throw them, it seems like there is a disconnect there. And if there is a disconnect there, and it obviously feels like there is, especially when you listen to and feel the tone of his voice, there's, you know, you got to fix that. Like, this is not a situation where, you know, Gary Sanchez is calling the pitch that he wants to throw, and that's it. Like, there's a game plan. You guys need to be talking about it beforehand. Talk about situational pitches. Like, all of these things need to happen. It seems like the communication before the start is lacking, and that's one of the big problems. There's no confidence.
We heard all spring that Gary Sanchez and Sonny Gray were working together.
Yeah, that was one of the storylines that we were excited about, because that's an important thing. And I thought that was going to be a really big deal, because especially with the way Sonny Gray pitches, because he has so many different breaking balls, and he could throw them at any count. You got to be on the same page with your catcher. And the fact that at the end of last year they didn't have as much time together.
We gave him the pass, though, last year, because a guy came over in the middle of the season.
Right.
It was understandable.
And now you have an offseason.
No excuses now.
No,
there's
no excuse.
To not be on the same page. And I'm not saying, I don't think the answer is, oh, just start Romine. The answer is Gary Sanchez and Sonny Gray, figure your shit out.
Yes, 100%. You can't do that and take Gary Sanchez's bat out of the lineup.
Hell no, especially now he's starting to hit. He's starting to get hot. And,
right.
And Gary Sanchez, I mean, he goes on one of those hot streaks. He's the best hitter in baseball. So
he's one of the best. I don't know,
No, I'm saying, like, he can be the best hitter in baseball when he's on a hot streak. Look what he did in the month of August a couple years ago. He hit like 20 home runs.
He could be among the best hitters in baseball. Yes.
Whatever. You know what I'm saying. So here's a question. Sonny's next start comes Thursday against Toronto in the Bronx. Who catches?
It's got to be. I mean, unless it just falls on a day that Gary Sanchez is going to have
day,
a normal
off day off. Before. Wednesday is an off day.
It's got to be Gary Sanchez. 100% Gary Sanchez. He's your starting catcher. Yep. He's the guy. He's your catcher. There's no other way to put it. Like, you got to figure it out. It's still early in the season where you can live with some of these things, but you got to get it straightened out now. I'd rather get it straightened out now and not avoid the situation and then have it come up and be a problem later, but deal with it now straight on and make sure that you get it. Whatever the problem is, whatever the disconnect is, they need to figure it out now in April, not in June or July.
So with no baseball the last 2 days, I just feel like every Yankees fan's been on Gleyber Torres watch.
Yes. That's I've been watching clips of Scranton Wilkes-Barre.
He's on fire. So Torres got off to, I think it was like in his first 10 at-bats. I don't know if he had a hit. Now he's hitting 385, 15 for 39 with a homer, a triple, and two doubles. He has been playing only second and third. I know you talked to Donnie Collins about Torres and how they're using him and all that kind of stuff. But we thought there was some confusion on when he could actually be called up. We thought it was the regular deadline, which was on Friday. That's not true. It's because he was on the 40-man roster, he needed to spend an extra few days in the minors, another one of baseball's little minute rules. So the day he can get called up is Wednesday, April 19th, which is this Wednesday. Boone was asked about it, and he said, is it possible? Yes. Is it likely? Not necessary. And to that I say, so you're saying there's a chance?
Yes. I mean, talk about some obscure answers. You know, I think one of the glaring things, too, is that over the last four games, I don't know if he played today. If he played today, I'm not sure where he played. But before today, before Sunday, if he didn't, if he played in the field, it was four games at third consecutive. So we're seeing him more at third as well. And that is something, to me, that is very interesting because, you know, I don't know if the Yankees are saying that Drury is a long ways away. We really haven't heard much about him. And these, we know how these head injuries can linger. They don't have the confidence in Andujar. You know, he's shown to be a bit shaky in the field. He's made some bad errors. But he's starting to hit now. He wasn't hitting before. So it's interesting where he's been playing. If you see that he's been, they just say he needs more work at third base. And that's why they're trying to load it up at the end, before he gets called up. Or he's going to be coming up and playing third base.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways you can interpret it. I think he's probably more comfortable at second base. He's played a lot more second base in his minor league career. So I would guess it's just he needs more reps at third base. And they want to get him as many reps at third. Like, second base might be more of a natural just thing for him instead of third base. Or it could be that Drury, we just don't know what the hell's going on with him. Like, there's not really been many updates other than the fact that he had tests. Nothing was conclusive, and that he's trying to get right, but it's kind of like a mystery.
Well, and we remember how long has it taken for Clint Frazier to come back from that concussion?
Wasn't a concussion for Drury. This was just, he's been dealing with blurred vision, I read. He's been dealing with this his whole career.
But I'm saying this is one of the unpredictable injuries that you'll get in any sport is the head injury. There's nothing really to say, okay, you're going to be better in X amount of weeks. You're just better when you're better when you feel better. You can do scans of the brain all you
could
want
be tomorrow,
but until you're ready and until you actually feel good, then you're ready. But only the body knows, and only the person knows. So doctors can't really do much for you, unfortunately.
I saw a spray chart for Gleyber's hits, and he's got five to left field, four to center field, five to right field. This is when he had 14 hits. I don't know where his single today went, but hitting to all fields, he looks to be a complete hitter.
And that was what Donnie said. One of the big things that Donnie said that I took away from his analyzations of Gleyber Torres was he makes adjustments like in game. Like if something happens in an at bat, like that next at bat, he will make that adjustment. He will make it within an at bat. Like, he's a smart guy who can make these adjustments and feel what he's doing. I think it's such a big deal when you're a player and you can feel that something is either not right, or if you need to make an adjustment, you can feel enough of your swing in your body and where your hands are that you can actually make that adjustment on a fly. Like, that is a skill that not a lot of guys have.
That is next level feel for the game.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's something that not everybody has. And it's something where you could take the most talented guy in the world, and there's plenty of players with talent, but if you have that next level feel, those intangibles, then you become a superstar.
Yeah.
We don't know if Gleyber Torres could come up and not be able to hit. He could be a complete bust. But everything so far in his career is that he has, quote, it. So I can't wait for him. I cannot wait until he's called up. And I don't know. I think it's, we said June. It's got to be before June, right?
I think at this point now, yeah, I think we're talking. I mean, there's a countdown from Wednesday on. I think it could be any day. And talking just quickly more about Drury, we have Sydney, who's in the comments, I guess, also someone who gets migraines, saying that there's usually when they're hard to diagnose, and for the most part, there's never one reason why you get them. So that's crazy. So the amount of reasons it could be a list of things that, you know, they've attributed to where, you know, he does this and then the next day he has a migraine. And maybe that's a, you know, a list of five or six things, who knows, but they can't pinpoint why or, you know, when it'll happen a lot of the time too. My mother used to get them all the time too. That's and it's scary. Just one of those things. Yeah.
And it's kind of compounding here because Wade's not hitting. Wade's had a chance. He's not hitting. Walker's not hitting either. So Wade is batting 094 on the season. Walker 188. You got Andujar, who's batting 135, although he's had some better at-bats recently. So the depth we thought that the Yankees had in the infield has not been playing well on the field. And I want to talk about Tyler Wade for a little bit because that throw he made on Thursday when he was trying to get the runner out at the plate, it was a drawn-in infield, and he short-hopped Gary Sanchez. It was an atrocious throw. People were saying, oh, Gary Sanchez needs to block that ball. Gary Sanchez is not worried about a one-hop from 75 feet away. He's worried about tagging the runner when he catches the ball. You need to hit him in the chest right there. That was a terrible throw by Wade. And if he's going to be making crummy plays in the field, there is really no place for him.
In that situation, if you're going home, you better damn well make sure that you make that throw. Because all hell breaks loose if you don't make that throw, and you're not getting it out on the play. So not only do you have to make the throw, but you have to make it in a spot where a tag can be applied as well. So it has to be there in time. It was a bad play, and you're right. If he's not playing well defensively, this is twice now he's been up and not hit. And I don't know, maybe this is Tyler Wade. Maybe this is Tyler Wade. Maybe he is another one of the great Yankee 4A players.
4A player.
If that's what it is, then you know there's no spot for him because there's no permanent spot for him. His spot would be to be the utility guy. And if that is the case, you would have to beat out the one guy who can play everywhere and gets hits all the time and has good at bats, which is Ronald Torres. And he's a proven guy that the guy everybody in the dugout in the clubhouse knows and loves. And he does a good job when called on. Whenever he's asked to do something, seems like he does it almost every time.
I thought if you gave Wade consistent or relatively consistent at-bats, we'd see something out of him, and we haven't yet. And we were having, do you remember the Facebook, the chat we were having in Facebook amongst the Bronx Pinstripes writers talking about his stance? And I compared it to Brett Gardner. If you go back and look at Brett Gardner in 2008 when he was called up, his batting stance was all over the place. His bat was held high, he was kind of open, and he had a lot of movement in his swing. And now if you look at Brett Gardner, he's extremely still at the plate. I think that was a Kevin Long mechanical change. Kevin Long did that with a lot of hitters. You remember he did that with Nick Swisher too? He made Swisher much more quiet at the plate. Just focus on putting the barrel on the ball. What is all this movement? You don't need all that movement. Tyler Wade has a lot of movement at the plate right now. He's not a good enough hitter to have a lot of movement. Keep it simple. Keep it simple, stupid.
I mean, it's funny because it's for some guys it works. Like you watch, you look at how Aaron Hicks swings the bat, and it's a similar setup where he starts with a wider open position, and his timing mechanism is to bring the leg over and hands go back and almost like rotate at the same time. And it's hard to do because you have a lot of moving parts that have to synchronize every single time. And the reason why a lot of these guys are simple, making their more, you know, their batting stance and their swings quieter or more simple, short to the ball, is because you can repeat it over and over and over again a lot easier than these long elaborate leg kicks and things like that. We saw what Judge did. He made it a lot more simple. There's other things in there, but he made it more simple. You see, it's funny because you watch Tyler Wade, who the big news in the offseason when he was working with Albert Pujols. Go watch some Albert Pujols. Go look at some GIFs and like videos of his swing. He is very quiet, barely moves his leg. It's like a toe tap, not even just a raising down, and he's all lower half. And Tyler Wade, yeah, you're right. The bat's up high, looking like Craig Counsell a little bit. Yeah. Like he's got some, you know, it's a funky batting stance, and it just seems like it's too elaborate for a guy like that, who is struggling, obviously, but now is one of those, it's difficult when you're not getting everyday at-bats to make an adjustment at this point.
Yeah, and you mentioned the guy who's hitting is Ronald Torres. He's batting 429 in the season, 9 for 21. Had a great game on Friday in Detroit. You've painted me as a Torres hater.
I don't know why you keep saying that other people paint you as a Torres hater. You paint yourself.
You got to play. I don't
put words in your mouth.
You got to play toe while he's hitting. Got to play him.
Absolutely. You know, there's nobody else playing well right now. When you look at people who can play second base, he's the one guy who's playing well. You got to play him at this point. You know, he filled in. We remember the long stretch he had last season in the first month of the season for Didi playing it short. And he did very well. He played extremely well. And it wasn't Didi level production, but it wasn't that far off, in all honesty.
No, I mean, it was far off because...
No, okay, so here, I got...
He's a different type of player.
Yes, I got into this discussion on Twitter on Friday night, and it's like, why do the Yankees not just think of Torres as an everyday player? And the reason is because we know what Torres' ceiling is. He can make contact. He will put the barrel on the ball, and that is great. He gives you competitive at-bats, but he's a singles hitter. You just... Didi Gregorius can hit for power. The idea of Tyler Wade is he could be a dynamic offensive player. He can get the ball. He can have a little bit more pop. He can hit the ball in the gap. A lot of doubles, a lot of triples. He can steal bases. We know what Neil Walker is as a professional, and it's not a 188 hitter. Neil Walker is a much better hitter. Right. And as far as Andujar, the potential of Andujar is he can have 20 to 25 homer power. He is a guy in the minors who has hit. Torres, we know what he is, and it's great. It's great that he's consistent. That is the best attribute of Torres, is you plug him in the lineup and you know what you're getting.
Right.
But the thing is, his ceiling is what he is right now.
And that's fine. That's, you know, you don't need a high ceiling from a utility guy who can play multiple positions and then give you good at-bats. He's going to be at the bottom of the order and set the table. Totally. He's a table setter, and that's what you need him for. And when he's in the game, he's all hustle, playing his ass off, and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He makes some you know, dumb errors in the field, but when you're looking at him as an offensive player, he works the count, he gets on base, he can run the base as well, he's got some, you know, good wheels. Like, the guy does a lot of things really well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a second baseman.
100%. And he can play third and short.
He can play third and short, but I think if you're talking about if he had to play every day, it's got to be second base. I don't think he's a long-term third baseman. He played for 3-4 weeks when Didi was out last year, but I think he's not a left side of the infield guy.
No, he would be a second baseman if that's Toke could probably go get a full-time job somewhere else if he wanted to after the year. I would almost guarantee he could on another team.
I mean, the Marlins are coming in this week. He'd be their best player.
Oh man, Starlin Castro, that's rough. But he's a guy that you, at this point, when you have Walker and Wade just not hitting the ball at all, and you know, like you just talked about Walker, we kind of know what he is as a professional player. We've seen him; he's got a track record. He's gonna hit at some point. That's what he does. He hits. Wade, I have no confidence that he's gonna hit because I've never seen it. So. At that point, you have to play Ronald Torres, and Neil Walker's going to be, you know, he's over at first base anyway.
Yeah. What you just made me think of this. What type of reception does Castro get at the stadium?
What type of reception?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is this a joke?
No. What are you talking about?
Oh, reception. I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, like, what do the fans do for him? Like, does he get an ovation, or is it just like another guy coming to the plate?
Castro. I think people cheer him. I thought you said Cashman. I was very, very confused.
Oh, no, Castro.
I'm like,
Starling,
I don't know.
Castro.
Actually, the reception at the stadium is actually not that great.
Yeah, for Castro, I think it's going to be like, he's going to get announced and people are going to be like, oh, yeah, he was on the team last year. Let's go.
No, come
him.
On. He's better than that. He was a good player. He was he's a good hitter. I think people
two
remember
seasons,
him
though.
Also
it's
because of the
seasons.
Big trade. There was a big trade. He started this whole influx of guys coming in with Cashman. It was he was a guy I was very excited for him.
Yeah, hell yeah, we were
like
excited
we were
coming off of Stephen Drew.
That's true. That is very true. I don't know. I think he got a bit of a raw deal. I would love for Starlin Castro to be playing second base right now. Love it. I would love it.
But that would be no Giancarlo.
They could have figured something out.
You mentioned Hicks earlier with the big game. He had the inside the park home run, then the outside the park home run. He's looking healthy after coming back, which is awesome to see. I love inside the park home runs. I was sitting with my girlfriend on the couch on Friday night. I saw the ball bounce away from the center fielder. She's buried in her phone because she could give a shit less what's going on. I put your phone down. Watch what's going to happen. And all she caught the end of it with Hicks's slip and slide into home. But then she watched the replay. So inside the park home runs are fun for everybody.
They're a lot of fun. When you saw it hit the bottom of that wall and it ran away and there was no left fielder in sight to come in to get that ball because he's still picking his nose or flirting with whoever's in the first row, you knew it was going to be a race to home plate. So it was fun to watch. Not kind of what I want to see out of Aaron Hicks immediately, though. I love seeing it. Don't get me wrong. Not what I personally want to see him be doing as soon as he gets back is doing all that running. obliques, you know, soft tissues, lots of things that could happen doing trying to overextend yourself to stretch out and inside the Parker. But seems like he's healthy. Seems like he's good. I mean, this is going back to him talking about that he didn't even feel like he needed to be on the DL in the first place.
Yeah.
That it was, you know, if it were up to him, he would have played through it. So
I bet if the Yankees had a redo, they wouldn't have put him on. They didn't expect the wrath of injuries to come after they put him on the DL. It was precautionary.
Well, I don't know. I think the Yankees might, this early in the season, might still be precaution, you know, be cautious with him because they know what kind of, you know, the soft tissue on that guy. It doesn't heal very well, and it gets irritated very fast. So you got to be careful with him. If something pops up, you know, if he were to say, hey, I'm sore, he's going to get a couple of days off, like right now. So they're going to be handling him with white gloves.
I also loved what we saw out of Montgomery. It was a bounce back start. He was terrible against Baltimore. He had nothing in that game against Baltimore, and he was pitching like it, but he was attacking hitters in the Detroit lineup. It's not a great lineup. It still has some names in there. Cabrera, Victor Martinez, Castellanos, I know, had a big year, but he was attacking, and that's what I love to see. Didn't walk a lot of people.
No, yeah, that was one of the big things that we wanted him to work on, was going after getting those throwing the ball in the zone, because when he's throwing the ball in the zone more often, he's going to get more of those ground balls. We saw him go deep into the game as well. Also, one of the biggest reasons is because he's getting contact. If you pitch to contact and you're getting, you know, weak contact and you're getting a lot of ground balls, that's a very good thing for a pitcher to be able to get deep into a game. And the Yankees needed it at that point. You know, they needed some relief on the front end. They needed relief from the starters to give them some time. So
and we thought it was going to be a cakewalk of a game. That game was way closer than it should have been. Yankees had base runners on all night. They were dominating that game. It ended up being 8-6 thanks to Betances. We have a mailbag question about Betances, so we're not going to get into it right now. But that game was dominated by the Yankees, and they only won by 2 runs. So.
And that was a Betances thing, because Betances was just threw up all over himself.
Yeah. So the Marlins are coming in. They stink. They're 4-11. You got to take these two games at the stadium, especially when you have Severino versus Caleb Smith and then Masahiro Tanaka versus Harlan Garcia.
I'm just glad that Derek Jeter's not coming because
you are.
I don't know. Yeah, because I don't know how Tanaka would pitch. I think Tanaka, you know,
right. He doesn't like when he's in the building.
Yeah, you might think it's good. Another Derek Jeter day, and then be like, you know, let me give up 15 home runs in 2 innings or an inning and a half. Not even, or did he even get through an inning? I don't remember. It was bad.
I think it was 4 homers or 5 homers in 2 innings.
It was awful. So yeah, so for that reason, I'm happy about it. I mean, I kind of understand why Jeter is saying that. Jeter doesn't want the attention in the first place, so
it's
very Jeter not to come.
He said I would just be a distraction, and the Yankees are coming to Miami in August, so we'll do whatever.
He said something about it being awkward too, didn't he? He said the word awkward. The word awkward was in one of those quotes. Like it would be awkward. Like you're visiting the ex-girlfriend's house or something.
Don't you think it would be?
I guess. I mean, awkward. I mean, where
for
are you
the first time? No, because for the first time in 30, 20 something years, Derek Jeter would be on the other guy's team.
Yeah, it would be a great radio to hear Susan Waldman's call when Jeter shows his face at a Hal Steinbrenner's box. It'd be like a complete redo of the Roger Clemens. Oh my God, it's Jeter! He's coming out of Hal's box!
He'd still get an ovation, but you think there'd be one person in there booing?
Yeah. Might get slapped by the guy next to him, but Jeter's going to get an ovation every single time. It doesn't matter what he does. He gave us Stanton as well. I mean, this guy's been nothing but good to us.
That's true. Sessa was supposed to start against Detroit. He got sent down to AAA. CeCe's due to come back off the DL at some point soon. And there's been no indication that he needs more time on the DL. So I expect CeCe to make a start maybe on Friday.
Hey, we saw Big Boy move in the fight. He was getting ready for it. He was in the middle of everything. So I think he's just fine. Loves it. Big smile on his face. But yeah, no, I'm glad that it was nothing, and you know, he talked about not even being able to feel what he felt on the game day, and to feel it again afterwards. So that's good, all good signs.
So the Yankees just left Fenway. The Red Sox are on fire. They're 13-2 to start the season. I saw some disgusting MLB pop-up notification that it's one of the best starts since like a mid-'80s Brewers team for an American League team. The Yankees play end the season at 3 games at Fenway Park. I still think those games are going to mean a lot. I think those are going to be like playoff games. They're going to matter for the division. It's April 15th as we're recording this. A lot of shit's going to happen between now and then. But you also have to realize that these games count just as much as the ones in September do. And the Red Sox are playing really hot right now. They're winning a lot of games. The Yankees are seesawing back and forth. So they're going to have to get their shit together pretty soon or else the Red Sox are going to pull away.
It's tough to pull away this early. I mean, there's just so many things that happen. But yeah, they're playing good baseball. Obviously, they're the best start in franchise history. They're to be reckoned with right now. They're hitting the ball well. They're pitching well, except for David Price when he just doesn't. He's like, I'm gonna stop today. I don't have my best stuff. Let's say it's a blister. Let's say I have no feeling in my fingers. Something. I don't know. I'm just not gonna throw anymore. I don't know how that guy walks through Boston. I don't know how he shows his face anywhere up there. If I was a Red Sox fan, I would just crucify him.
Yeah, well, he makes $30 million a year, so he can probably pay somebody to just cloak him in something so no one even knows.
He's got a stunt double that walks through for him. Yeah. So, you know, I love the fact that there's no possible way he's opting out of that contract. He's going to be there for a long time.
He's their problem.
That's the universe balancing out the Dodgers bailout. So that's something at least. Not that it's a full balance because that one still hurts. But the... But yeah, they're playing well. Bottom line, I mean, Yankees got to play better.
There you go.
This is baseball, Susan. You know, you got to win the games, not lose the games.
No, and we talked about it on the last episode, I think, where we understand it's April. It doesn't mean you can't be frustrated with how the team is playing, and we are frustrated. I think everyone's frustrated. Boone and the team is frustrated.
I'm frustrated that the freaking weather didn't cooperate and we couldn't get two more games in Detroit because that would have been something good.
Could have been a 3-game sweep and we're talking about going home to play the crummy, not even AAA Marlins. Like the Marlins are garbage.
Yeah, they got a couple bats, that's it. But there's Castro's going to be ready to go, you know that.
Okay, so... we have a t-shirt winner before we get to mailbags. You want to read this? It's one of my favorite reviews we've ever had.
Yeah, let me get it. All right. This one says, this one gets me through my shift. So 5-star with a little cop emoji by PV Packers fan. He says, I work as a deputy sheriff down in Florida, and this makes my 12-hour shift go way faster, even though it only knocks off an hour. Could listen to these guys talk about my Bronx Bombers all night long. Actually try and listen to as well as I bring people to jail. And one guy actually told me that he listens to the podcast too. So we both give this podcast 5 stars. I love that.
I love that. The guy who was going to jail, unfortunately, could not rate it because he is in jail.
His phone was taken away.
Yeah. But see, I wanted, assuming he didn't do anything too bad, like if it was just like a small crime that he pulled, PV Packers fan needs to be like, okay, we just bonded over our love for the Yankees. Maybe I'm going to let you off with a warning right now.
Yeah, well, he's already in the car being arrested. Okay. So
I don't know how cops work. I don't know how like the paperwork is. Actually
it sounds like he was detained at that point. But
okay,
and they're just doing small talk to pass time, which is, you know, what are you gonna do? So I love it. If you're listening, do you write letters? Is that how you communicate with the outside world? I don't know. Make a collect phone call. Call our voicemail line and leave a message. That would be awesome.
That would be the only thing we need to complete the voicemail line is someone calling as their one phone call is calling to complain about the Yankees from jail. That'd be beautiful.
I would love that. That would make my month.
Yes. So PV Packers fan, DM the Twitter account at Bronx Pinstripes or find us on Facebook and we'll get you your t-shirt. Mailbags. First one's from Greg at New York. The first 10 games of the season have been torturous, but there have been some positives. It's too early to decide whether Boone is making the right moves, but it seems like Murphy's Law is hard at work the last couple of games against the O's. How much of it is on Boone? I know there is going to be a learning curve, but what would it take for Cashman to pull the ripcord?
We've talked about the fact that, you know, I'll address the ripcord initially. It's not happening. I mean, like, come on. Come on, guys. This is we're in April. He's a brand new manager. We all knew that there were going to be some kind of a growing pain time frame. If you didn't think that there were going to be issues in the beginning, then your head is in the clouds. You thought he was going to be just like the greatest manager from the get-go.
Everyone was so positive, though.
We can still be positive about him. Still be positive about him, but you still have to understand that things are going to happen. There's no doubt about it. He's still feeling things out. Like this, I know we're going to get to the Betances situation as well, because that, to me, is one of those situations that are like... there's two ways to look at it.
How more obvious could that be? Let's read that mailbag question right now. Let's just bleed these together. So this one's from Rick at RickDaddy7601 on Twitter. I have two questions. Why even bother with Dellen? And why didn't Boone just bring in Chapman at the end of the eighth inning? So he tweeted this to me after Friday night's game. But then we saw, or during Friday night's game. Dellin Betances, I mean, he gave up five hits against Detroit. Boone left him out there to give up five hits. How more obvious could it be that a guy does not have it? It could slap him in the face. Everyone was saying, come on. Come on, Boone. Like, how long? How much are you going to let this go? Not only is it detrimental, not detrimental, it's counterproductive for Betances out there, but you're also getting to a point where this game is now no longer a blowout. It should have been a blowout.
Well, so I think this is where it is. So, I mean, I'm one of the guys, too. I tweeted it from Bronx Pitch Drives. I'm like, Boone, any day now, what are we doing here? And so I, after looking at it and watching the game and seeing just like kind of the body language from Boone as well, there's another side of this, I think, as well. And part of it is because everybody had that expectations for him to be good because everybody knows the team is good. So they expect the manager to be good. What do you have to do? You just got to make sure the guys are out there and they'll play, right? You can't really screw it up at this point. Well, he's also feeling guys out. And I thought this was one of those moments because it was one of those laugher games. It was 8-3 when he came in. It was a blowout at that point. That he gave him a little bit more of an extra leash to try to work out of something. And it seemed like in his face, he was like, you could see it in Boone's face, like he wanted to pull him, but at the same time, come on, man, one more batter, get this guy so that you could come in here and close this inning out to end on a positive note. I felt like he really wanted him to get out of that inning.
Yeah.
And I think that's also important to note because, you know, there's a relationship between the manager and a player as well. And with a manager in a game situation like that, gives him a little bit more room to have confidence and show confidence in a guy that he can work out of something. And maybe that confidence, maybe he does, and that confidence, you know, rolls over to his next. So, you know, I was frustrated while I was watching it, but after I thinking about it a little bit more and watching the body language, I do see the other side as well.
Totally. If the game was a lot closer, he would have been pulled.
Yes.
Earlier. So
I think the situation absolutely dictated why he stayed in as long as he did.
I get that, but you could tell Betances had nothing. Like, you know from almost instantly if Betances is on or if he's off. And everyone watching knew he was off. So he was not going to work himself out of that. The only way he was going to get out of that is if someone hit the ball right at somebody.
Well, and to be fair, the last hit, if I remember correctly, it was a little, you know, slap to right to the right side. It would have been a routine play for second base if it was in the position. But, you know, it was a weak ground ball, bottom line. So it wasn't good contact. And I think Boone saw some of that too and was trying to let him get out of it. Because some of the, you know, once he let up a couple runs, he started firing some BBs in there. And actually, I'm like, okay, maybe he actually doesn't look terrible right now when you're just watching where the pitches are going. People were making contact and they were hitting him, which is better than walking. So, I mean, if we're looking at some positives, they were hitting the ball. So that means he's throwing strikes.
Give up like a 450-foot moon bomb, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was early. But I got people in the comments asking if we missed Girardi. Someone asked, yeah. Alberto asked if I missed Girardi. I was impartial when they were getting rid of, when we kind of figured they were getting rid of him at that point. So I was.
We both were.
You know, it is what it is. Like, I'm not going to say I miss him. I'm not going to say I'm happy to see him go either.
We were extremely frustrated with Girardi at times too. So yeah. I think it's just that the nature of being a fan of baseball, a fan of a baseball team, is that you get angry at the manager.
Well, and we knew what we were going to get mad at before it even happened with Girardi. We knew what was going to happen. We know his MO. We don't know Boone's MO. It looks like you leave pitchers in too long. That looks like the MO for him right now.
Or use guys that don't belong in high leverage situations in high leverage situations.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll figure him out, but there's still a lot of time for him to change his ways too.
Whoever asked that in the comments, though, Girardi's going to get a job. He's going to get a job next year.
Yeah. Yeah. If he wants a job, he'll get a job. If he wanted a job this year, he probably would have gotten a job.
I think it was late.
It was late. There were a couple situations. I don't even know
like
if he wanted
the
to
Nationals.
Go into.
I know the Nationals already had hired somebody. So
that's true. It was late.
I think, though, if he had gotten fired, if the Yankees didn't, although maybe wouldn't think the same way of him, if it's sort of like a chicken or the egg thing, right? Because they got to game 7 of the ALCS. How, you know, that looks good for Girardi for his next job. That looks good. If they were bounced against Cleveland, it doesn't look as good. If they were bounced against Cleveland and the last memory you have of Girardi is him not challenging that play in game 2, so it may be a different thing.
We're going to see Girardi in a uniform again
right. Very
soon if he wants it. I don't see him in the booth anymore. He just looks out of place at this point. Maybe that was just the first week I watched it and he just looked like kept saying we and He just looked like he wanted to be a manager.
That's just sad. No one wants.
It was
to,
sad.
No one wants. To
it was sad. It was. I didn't like seeing it.
What's up next?
All right. The next one is from Brian Brennan at BBR 1991. If Gleyber Torres does get called up, where does Brandon Drury fit into the team when he comes back, assuming he does?
Kind of.
Yeah, sorry. There was also a comment on Facebook of PJ McQuaid talking about, I guess Boone said something about Drury today, talking about saying when he spoke with him compared to when he spoke with him the last time when they left the road trip, he sounded much better, much better, like a different guy. So they sound relatively optimistic, if that's anything.
And we kind of touched on the infield dynamic a few minutes ago when we were talking about it earlier, but I still think it's Brandon Drury's job is third base. When he's healthy, I think he gets that job.
Well, I think that Gleyber Torres, when he comes up, they want him to be the second baseman. They don't want him to be the third baseman. I feel like in a perfect world, they have one guy who they just traded for to be third base, and if that doesn't work out, they have another guy in the minor leagues who is a first or is a third baseman and is not, you know, he doesn't play really anywhere else. Gleyber Torres is a shortstop, is a middle infielder, you know, by trade. That's what he is. He can play second base.
Yes, and then if you're really looking down the road and you're like, okay, so Gleyber Torres is called up and he's playing well, and you have Drury healthy and Bird is back and healthy, then what do the Yankees do? Well, then at that point, Torres is your second baseman, Drury is your third baseman, Bird's your first baseman, and you have Neil Walker and Ronald Torres to be the depth. Unfortunately, Tyler Wade, especially with the way he's playing, is the odd man out, and that's obvious.
Oh, 100%. I mean, Tyler Wade's got to hit the ball. You can't just be a guy that can play multiple positions and that's it. Because the Yankees have a few of those guys.
So I want Drury to come back and be healthy because he was hitting in the first couple games of the season. And it looked like he was going to be exactly what the Yankees thought, which is a right-handed bat that had not really developed his power yet. And they were going to enjoy the fruits of Cashman seeing the future for Brandon Drury. He was going to be another one of those guys that Cashman pulls out of his ass. And people are saying, now where the Yankees find this all-star?
Yeah, and I still think he's going to be one of those guys. You know, to what extent the ceiling is, I don't know, but I think it's high. I think he's got a lot of really good potential. And, you know, this is something that it may linger on, but I at some point it's going to pass. You have to believe. And when it does, when he's fully healthy, then he's going to be back and he'll play third base because I love his intensity. The guy looks like a ball player.
The next question is from Ryan. He says, should baseball just allow brawls to happen at a certain extent, like how hockey allows guys to fight? It might end up policing the game even more and avoid situations like we had on Wednesday. Quickly, aftermath from the brawl. Tyler Austin suspended 5 games. Joe Kelly suspended 6 games. 6 games for a pitcher is not comparable to 5 games for a position player. 5 games for a position player is a lot. Nevin, and Cora were all fined. Nevin had that hilarious quote after the game about how he looked fat in his he was wearing too many layers because it was cold. And then Canely, who was ejected from the game, did not get any fines or anything like that, which was good. So nothing else is coming down for Canely.
I think Pedroia was fine, too, because he's on the DL.
He was on the DL and he came out. Right. So if you come out and you're on the DL, you get in trouble.
Yeah. So I kind of think they do let it happen, don't they? I mean, were their umpires stopping it? I mean, kind of. No, they try to stop it. They try to prevent it from happening in the beginning. But once it's on, I mean, like, it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, there's not.
It's the guys who are breaking it up or the players themselves. That's who's breaking it up.
You
it's
can't
the other
do
players.
Anything, though. Once that starts, you can't do anything. An umpire is going to get killed. I think what Ryan is talking about is like it would be Tyler Austin and Joe Kelly fight for 30 seconds. That's like, what it would be.
That's
what
ridiculous.
Does. That's what hockey does. Then they get their penalties. They go and they serve their penalties. But would that police the game? Would guys be more? Because baseball brawls, it's funny because they run out there and they know they get maybe 5 seconds of fighting, and then there's going to be a pile, and then no one's really going to do anything. It's just a melee. So if they go into it knowing it's going to be me versus Joe Kelly, or Tyler Austin versus Joe Kelly for 30 seconds, they might not be inclined to fight.
I think you have, this is like your own little dream. Because I don't even think that's what he was really talking. I think he was more like, does baseball just let brawls happen? And I think they kind of do. They don't really say no.
He's saying hockey because hockey
it happens, but it happens in a very different way. It's still a natural way of happening.
I misunderstood this question.
A little bit, but only because in hockey, there's no... You're not running from the from home plate to the pitcher's mound. There's no space in between. Usually in hockey, when there's a fight, it's they're very close, or they're on freaking skates on ice and they can get to each other extremely fast before anybody else. And then it's just like engagement one-on-one. And it's just like,
but it's allowed. You know, the one-on-one engagement is allowed. And then it breaks up.
They do stop the, yes. But at the same time, the brawls, like, there are not umpires trying to like necessarily get in the middle of fights. Like some do, but mostly it's just players policing themselves. I think they kind of do happen. Look at Arenado. He was chasing guys around trying to jack him. he's a lunatic out there.
Arenado took some extra Adderall before the game.
Yeah, it was great.
No, I don't know. It would be. I don't think they allow brawls. I think baseball does not want brawls. Whereas hockey, I know they say they don't want fights, but they still want fights.
You don't think Rob Manfred was like, okay.
No,
when Yankees Red Sox.
When he
saw
Yankees
when Tyler
Red
Wade
Sox
came
happening.
Out, yeah, when Tyler Wade started running out, he's like, go, 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 go.
Yes.
You know Manfred was like, yes. This is exactly absolutely what baseball wants. Baseball wants there to be bad blood between these two teams.
He had the sound of cash registers just ching-ing in the back.
Damn right.
No, I get that, yeah. But baseball does, I mean, you know, in fact, the fact that they had this hard slide rule and there's no contact at the catcher and all this stuff actually allows these brawls to happen even more. Because the only reason that Brock Holt was pissed off is because you can't slide hard anymore. You're talking about last episode how baseball's getting too soft. If you could just allow hard slides to happen, it ends right there. Hard slide, that's normal. Hard slide. I'm a second baseman. I'm a shortstop, and I'm trying to turn a double play. I'm going to get slid into. That's just
you're still going to take offense to it if a guy cleats you. I mean, at the end of the day, you'll have more scuffles because those will happen more often. But yes, like you could get mad about smaller things now, and we could just like completely sissify this game because that's what's happened. Maybe this is something they need to add to the minor league rules, right? Maybe we're doing like, okay, extra innings, guy on second. If there's two walks, if there's a walk already, the second guy does not walk to first base. He fights the pitcher. That could get interesting. Then you start seeing like massive dudes, coming in as closers. I like it. I think that is a nice little rub.
We're fixing baseball one episode at a time here.
Hey, got to do it.
What's up next?
All right, we're talking about Sonny Gray here. Noah is writing in about Sonny Gray. He's a tremendously talented baseball player, but can we just agree he should not be interviewed? He's so nervous trying to recite the front office one-liners. It makes me nervous. Do you guys feel the same way? And I know what he's referring to because this email came in right after I was watching those interviews at the locker with Sonny Gray after his start in Boston. And yeah, it was weird. It was a weird tone. They were the reporters. You know, they kind of got something when they said, hey, what was your report? Why were you shaking off pitches? And he didn't answer the question why I was shaking off pitches. He just was like, he seemed like a guy that had no confidence and talking in front of class. Like he was like so nervous.
What is Sonny Gray at this point? 28 years old, right?
He looks 15.
He looks 15. He talks like he's 15.
Yeah.
Like he's a nervous kid out there. That's how he talks, and that's how he's pitching right now. It's like a nervous rookie.
Yeah, you know, he needs a shot of some confidence. Someone needs to do something. They gotta like fire him up because anyway, but going back to that too, like you could tell that there was something there that he did not want to say with him and Sanchez. There's a disconnect, 100%. And it's very obvious. Even I mean, we all could see it when we're watching them play. But at the same time, when he's shaking him off, but when he's talking about it and you read his facial expressions and the tone and everything else behind it, there's something there. There's something weird going on there. And they need to fix it.
If there is actually something there and Boone and the coaches know about it, then we might get a personal catcher.
No, I think this is where good relationship style coaches and managers come into play. This is where they make their money, isn't it? Where they can make sure that they can, you know, have that good relationship to talk to each guy and bridge the relationship or whatever the hell's going on and figure out a solution together as a team. This is what those guys should be doing. Forget the personal catcher situation. They need to fix this because they're professional baseball players. That's what needs to happen. And as a professional baseball player, if you have a good manager talking to you and you feel comfortable with that guy, then there should be some kind of a way to fix this. I'm not saying they have bad blood to each other. I think it's a communication thing.
Not bad blood.
And maybe it's a language issue. I don't know, but they need to fix it.
Gary Sanchez can speak English.
I know.
He's got to be able to say.
I'm making shit up at this point. I don't know what their problem is.
He can at least say fastball, slider, curveball, like all that, all the baseball lingo. He knows how to speak.
It could be a difference in philosophy, though, as well, on when you throw a certain pitch in a given situation.
Well, that just takes like, let's sit down in a room and figure this shit out. Like, how are you going to be? No, I don't. Okay, sorry. I just thought of this, it's not difference in philosophy, because there's no way that Austin Romine and Gary Sanchez go into a game, depending on who's pitching, with different philosophies. They're on the same page. Austin Romine's in all of the pitcher-catcher meetings just with Gary Sanchez and all the starting pitchers.
Right, but during the game, this is where things go off, is in a game. Yeah, you come in with a game plan. Maybe Sonny's like, okay, we've talked about this. It's a 2-2 count. This guy is constantly chasing with two strikes, low and away. I'm going to throw a breaking ball low and away. Sanchez is like, nah, this guy hit something like that. Last time I saw him, I'm going to call a different pitch. And then Sonny in his head is like, oh, we talked about this. Why aren't you throwing this? I'm shaking you off. But Gary Sanchez at that point in that game and in the situation says, oh, no, do this, or vice versa. And things change in a game. But there needs to be a constant communication between innings. And hey, like, we know who's coming up. This is how we're going to attack this guy.
Right. And he can't go out to the mound. He can't go out to the mound and talk about it.
Yeah. The communication needs to be absolutely accentuated between innings. It's a thing. It is. And it's going to get certain guys are going to have to get used to it faster than others.
Yeah. Next one's from Jake. Do you guys think Aaron Judge is having success this season because the microscope isn't on him with Stanton's early struggles? We have not really talked about how well Judge is playing right now. 340, 470, 556 is his slash line with 3 homers, 9 RBIs, and 53 at-bats. He's currently on an 11-game hitting streak. He's striking out a 32% clip, which is about what he did last year, and he's leading the league in walks.
Love it. I mean, yeah, we haven't talked about it as much because there have been so many other things that we had to harp on. But, you know, we've mentioned this guy is the consummate pro. Like, this every single time, it seems like he's going at a game and approaching an at-bat. The guy has a professional at-bat. The guy does, he's prepared. He's making adjustments. He's playing well in the field. He's stealing bases. I mean, the dude does everything right now. And when you see how he made such ridiculous adjustments from the end of 2016 to 17, like that alone, when I saw that and see what he was doing, it just makes me believe that this guy is going to continuously make these adjustments. He's smart enough. And, you know, we talked about one of those special attributes of a player to actually feel, you know, the way that you're swinging and make certain adjustments within a game or within a series or within an at-bat. Like, I do think Aaron Judge is one of those guys. And he's going to get better at it. Maybe he hit it was a big learning experience in the middle of the season last year when he went through that slump. But you know what he did? He dug himself out of that big hole and he came back and finished the season and had one of the best month probably in September. Right. So I got all the confidence in the world with this guy.
No, and it has nothing to do with the fact that the microscope isn't on him.
No,
I don't think he's that. I don't think he's a mentally weak player or anything like that.
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think we as a marketing side, you're like, oh, these guys could be great together, but at the same time, a little bit of a spotlight taken away. But
no,
Aaron
but
Judge
if
does
anything,
not care.
But there's still more Aaron Judge jerseys than Stan jerseys in the stadium. He's still got the Judge's chambers out in right field. Judge is still the face of the Yankees. Stan
is
not the face of the Yankees.
100%. No doubt about it. And he's been in a ton of marketing stuff, too. I mean, he's the more marketable guy right
now, for
sure.
The Pepsi commercial. Yeah. He's on the cover of the new MLB The Show video game. So he's still in a higher spotlight than Stanton. And Stanton's going to start hitting, and Judge will go into a slump this season, and the roles will be reversed.
Right. And they will. It will happen.
Of course, because that's the type of players they are. But we know Judge has done this before. Like, when Judge was in his slump last year in August, July and August, there was a small part of us, and I know a lot of Yankees fans, that said, okay, well, was it just a fluke? Was his first half a fluke?
And it was just, but there the reason why, you know, I felt like it was not a fluke was because the drastic changes, you know, they're just too drastic. You don't go from being the Triple Crown guy going into the All-Star break to falling off the planet. Like, something's up. Like, what's up? And it turns out there was something up, that he was dealing with some nagging injuries. So, you know, look, this is, if you remember when Aaron Judge came up, one of the big things on him was every single time he made a jump to the next level in the minor leagues and then to the pros, he struggled in the beginning, but he always made the adjustments and did well on whatever the league he was in, whether it was single A, double A, triple A, the pros. And that's exactly what he did. He made that adjustment. Then he had to make another adjustment because he went into a slump in the middle of a season. So he's got the abilities. He's the man.
All right. Why don't you read the last one?
All right, last one is from Robin. He said, hey, guys, or she, UK fan here. I am so pumped for the Yankees Red Sox series in London next year. Inside scoop for you. I have it in good authority. The series will be at the Olympic Stadium, which has dimensions perfect for baseball. Any chance there's going to be a BP outing this side of the water? Awesome. Good. I'm glad that that's going to be a sweet venue. Wish I could talk more about the Olympic Stadium. I don't watch soccer or anything like that, or any of the anything at the Olympic Stadium. I'm sure they play soccer there too, right?
No, yeah. So they do. Well, no, Wembley Stadium is, I know, where the NFL plays, and I think that's where they play soccer.
Okay, I don't freaking know. I have no idea, but I can Googling tell you this: it. I'm going over there, and yes, we will. I don't know how big it will be, but we will have with the amount of people that listen to this show and are Yankee fans that we know about that are in the UK. There's a whole contingent out there, and like I want to say four or five of them have come to our events. So right. We have met a bunch of these guys.
The least we could do is go over there for them.
I'm 100% going over there. There's no doubt about it. We will have. And you know, we got friends in the south of France too with a wine cellar.
We're Olympic good. Stadium, it just looks like where they did all the track and field events for the it must have been the main stadium for the Olympics.
Cool.
Are you have you been to London before?
No, but I've been to Heathrow.
So you've been to the airport. Awesome.
That's it.
That
I
does
looked
not
out the window
count.
And it, does and not it was count. Raining.
If you do not go outside, that does not count.
No, I have not been there. I have been through there, but not. I have never stayed there.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun, and I think there's a lot more baseball fans in the UK, especially Yankees, Red Sox. There's just a ton of fans over there. So just like from our podcast alone, it's just a small snippet of what we're reaching over there in the UK. That I think there is a massive interest.
I think it will be interesting. You know, I know some people are like, I don't like the fact that there's a home game taken away or whatever.
81 of them. Like, chill out, dude. Chill out.
It's not any further. What's the flight to London? 7 hours? 6 hours?
Well, it's the same time on the flight, but it's the time zones that are tough.
Okay, fine. Whatever. Similar to going to the West Coast, right?
No, I know. And then the argument is, well, you don't go to Oakland for two games. You go to Oakland and then Anaheim, and then you know you go out there for the whole week. You don't go out there.
Whatever. I don't really care about all that stuff. Like, I feel like these guys will just deal with it and figure it out. The fact that they're gaining more interest across internationally, I think is interesting. I think it's cool. I think baseball is an amazing game, and it should be celebrated and shown. The world should know more about baseball if they're not, you know, fans of it. So I'm all for advancing the game because that just means more players are going to come. I mean, like, think about it. In 20 years, 30 years, we may have more players coming over from Europe and the UK for baseball if they start getting this interest with the young kids. That's cool. That's something that's you know, growing the game. I love it. And it's an excuse to go to London.
Yeah, now I'm excited about going to London next June.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you for submitting mailbag questions. To do so, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Yankees Podcast. We're always tweeting out the call for mailbags there, so you can reply directly from that tweet, or you can post them in the Facebook group. Just search the Bronx Pinstripe Show on Facebook. We have a ton of good in-game chatter going on in that group, so that's really been popping off. Love to see that. Also, to finish this show, there will be voicemails. I think there'll be some ones about the brawl, which should be a lot of fun. To call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. And what I want you to do is also save that, so you don't have to go searching for it every time you have a thought that pops in your head, or anytime the Yankees and Red Sox get into a brawl. You can just pull that up. BP Show voicemail line, dial, rant, done. That's what we want.
No, that's a great idea. You should absolutely save it into your phone. Hey, look, we got a very big stretch coming up, like of big games with opponents that are not that easy. When you're dealing with the Marlins, you got to win these games. But then it's, you know, your Blue Jays for four. Blue Jays seem to always give some issues. Then it's the Twins, Angels, Astros. So it ain't getting easy. And unfortunately, we didn't have these Tigers games to kind of warm up. But now we got to use the Marlins for that. Hopefully the weather is good and they can play some good baseball. But yeah, big stretch coming up.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, for joining the Facebook Live. And we'll talk to you next week. Talk to you on Thursday.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Are you fucking kidding me? 14-1 in the end of the sixth. I'd rather slap my mom than see the fucking goddamn Red Sox beat the Yankees like this. Fuck, I blame Aaron Boone. I blame him. With the amount of fucking talent on this team, and this shit happens, fuck, public enemy number one, Aaron Boone.
Hey guys, your boy Lando from the Sip. I do not understand that game. I really don't. If you see the box score, we only had one less hit than them. We have one run off 10 hits. 10. They only had 11 hits and had 14 runs. Heavy struggles. Our bats were there, but wasn't there enough. I don't understand the game, but I'm not giving up on this team. This team is too good for us to be dominated like that. We actually got some hits off of a Cy Young pitcher. All right, guys, so y'all please stay positive. Please. Please.
I call that a work. Sick to my stomach. I can't believe that we just lost 14-1 to the Red Sox. Terrible. Awful. Disgusting. But it's early in the season, right? Oh, I can see it. Terrible. Bronx Pinstripe Show, please analyze this and help me make life.
That was fucking painful. Like, really fucking painful. I hate this fucking Red Sox team. The rivalry's back, motherfucker. How the fuck do you lose 14-1? And look pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. I don't know why every game feels like it's October. But every game feels like it's fucking October. Oh, I'm so fucking mad. I hate the Red Sox.
Hey guys, I'm watching Tyler Wade throw the ball, spike the ball in the dirt. What is his purpose on the team? Can't hit, can't field, get him off this team, let's see Glaber.
Hey, Pinstripers, this is Eric from Syracuse calling after last Thursday night's gutless and pathetic performance by Sonny Gray. I was doing my best impression of the Kobe Bryant meme, shaking my head and saying soft the entire three pathetic innings. God, too, that guy fucking sucks. Alright, on to Detroit.
I am so sick of watching Dellin Betances blow baseball games. The man cannot control his fastball, and when he does, it's pike. No one fears him. No one worries about that breaking ball anymore. They just sit on it. They just take advantage of him. The guy is unreliable to the point to where we need to send him to the goddamn major. Minors. God fucking. What are we going to do about Dellin Betances? I'm so sick and tired of being nervous, needing to go through a whole bottle of Tums whenever that man steps on the goddamn mound.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.